Tonight in the Flophouse, we examine the Billy Zane vehicle, Memory. Surely the best Billy Zane movie since the last one. Spent a lot of time at the beginning of the first episode simply going over the synopsis. We're going to start this episode with the Wikipedia synopsis of Memory. While lecturing in Brazil, Dr. Taylor Briggs, Billy Zane, an American authority on memory, consults on a patient found deep in the Amazon. During the exam, Taylor is accidentally exposed to a mysterious substance which unlocks a series of memories in his brain. Memories that are not his. The memory of a killer who committed crimes before Taylor was even born. A killer who is closer than you think. The mystery will rip open Taylor Briggs' well-crafted life, estranging his relationship with his best friend, Dr. Deepra Ching, leading him into romance with a beautiful, enigmatic painter, Stephanie Jacobs, played by Tricia Helfer, straining his relationship with his mom's best friend, Carol, Anne Margaret, causing him to question the surrogate father figure in his life, Dr. Max Lichtenstein. And now we join the others in the Flophouse.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. Simon's laughing because I'm putting my radio voice on.
Yeah, he is.
On.
He's so like, hello! Welcome to the Flophouse.
The show where we discuss movies that aren't that good.
And it sucks so bad. It makes me die inside.
Tonight we talk about the movie Memory, starring Billy Zane. And I think the Billy Zane issue.
Okay, well, and I think it's fair to call it an issue.
What are your feelings on Billy Zane?
I hate Billy Zane. I really do.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. In all scenes, he constantly has a smug look on his face. No matter what line he's delivering or what the emotional context is, he's always got this kind of like, whatever, man. I don't care.
I have to admit a sneaking fondness. Billy Zane.
I think it's stupid.
I don't know.
He looks like a fucking rapist. He looks like he would probably rape you. That's the thing.
He might, but he wishful would do thinking.
Oh, man.
A little bit of wishful thinking.
Oh, man.
Like, if Billy Zane raped you, he would do it with sort of a sly, understated humor.
No, there's a brutish, thug-like quality to him that makes him very unlikable.
I find his smugness somehow sort of charming.
Endearing? Sure. No, I don't think so.
I've had a really complex relationship with Billy Zane.
Explain.
I watched Lake Consequence, the Zalman King movie, when I was pretty young, and it was really erotic.
Sure.
So I always just kind of attribute...
Now,
like really, a pretty association really, thing.
Yeah.
Was
really,
it erotic because of Billy Zane, though, or was it just...
Well, I think the problem is that he was just post-pubescent, like, so that shit's all wrapped up in his brain now. It's all twisted together, and he doesn't know where the Billy Zane ends and the eroticism begins.
You're saying he gets aroused whenever he sees Billy
well,
Zane?
Well, again, not necessarily. I think the two are twisted together.
I actually think Dan's close to the mark here, guys. It wasn't Joan Severance.
I like the fact that I watch Billy Zane in this movie, and I feel like Billy Zane believes he is in some sort of light comedy.
Billy Zane believes he's in a light comedy in every movie he's in, because he's constantly like smirking or sneering at everyone, and he wears a shitload of turtlenecks in this movie.
Well, all I'm going to say is that some of his...
Turtlenecks, a lot of burgundy sweaters, sweaters.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't address his wardrobe, because this movie was clearly sponsored by L.L. Bean. He's either wearing a V-neck or he's wearing a turtleneck, and it's like burgundy, like
very gentle colors, like a nice maroon or like a tobacco color, like, you know, like a nice chocolatey brown.
Yeah.
Now, this movie and exposition, was there very much?
Literally, if it's possible for there to be 200% exposition in a movie, this movie had 200% exposition. It was all exposition.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with you,
sir. We are of a mind.
A key example, I would say, probably the point in which there's a to-do list that fills the entire screen, and one of the things on the to-do list is pick up scuba gear. And then later, lo and behold, in the movie, what skill does Billy Zane have that he needs to call upon to solve the mystery? But his scuba diving.
He has scuba diving abilities, sure.
Maybe I'm a little harsh, but I don't really think that he needed to be able to scuba dive. Like, do you really feel that, like, if that scene wasn't in the movie, you wouldn't have known what was going on?
My favorite exposition moment was when he and his Asian friend with the weird mustache...
Why do you have to bring up these Asian
boys? Well, it's because that was his friend. Okay, fine. His friend.
He only has literally one friend in the movie.
Yes.
his mustachioed friend.
In any case, his friend and he, they're at that bar, and they're talking, and his friend's talking about, like, you can't worry about whether or not you yourself will get Alzheimer's someday, like your mom who has Alzheimer's. And, like, they go on this conversation that's like, oh, so he's not only a good guy and really smart, but also really into Alzheimer's research. Got it. Which brings up another problem I have with this goddamn movie. The fucking movie was about memories, so they made the character an Alzheimer's researcher. Had nothing to do with the plot, it seems really fitting.
Simon, that's good screenwriting.
No, it's not good screenwriting. There's nothing that makes that good. What makes that good?
You give the character a personal problem that relates to the theme of the movie. And the theme is memory, as exemplified by the title of the film, Memory, which is explained to us. The first shot of the film is a dictionary definition of memory for all of the non-English speakers in the audience.
Frankly, to tell you the truth, fucking for the first hour and a half, I had no fucking idea what was going on.
Literally no idea whatsoever.
Now, granted, I'd been drinking and I was texting somebody most of the time, but to tell you the truth, no idea. I just saw Billy Zane smirking most of the time.
I would say it would be fair to call it a slow-starting movie.
Well, I wouldn't even say that it was slow-starting so much as it was, like, a weird series of, like, tableaus that didn't really have anything to do with each other. Like, Billy Zane, researching Alzheimer's. Billy Zane, in Brazil. Billy Zane! Tooling around town.
Well, let's address this a little bit. The thrust of the film is Billy Zane starts getting memories that aren't his, and that leads him into, like, this mystery.
It's a mystery.
And these memories are, like, these are memories that some family member had that he's remembering.
I really liked all the bits where all of a sudden he would close his eyes, and then he would be in a memory.
Yeah, that was really
good.
Because
it was really true to life.
Sure, that's the way I experience memory.
Well, like, that was the best part about it, is that it wasn't just that he had his parents' memories, he experienced them in, like, a living way. Like, he would live the memory in his waking life.
Well, whenever I have a memory, it's like an epileptic seizure. Like, yes. I literally...
Oh, just, well, no, remember, though...
I disengage from life as it is, and then it's like a blackout. So that's why I try not to remember things in day-to-day life.
Sure.
But the reason he starts having these mysteries... The film starts out in Sao Paulo, where he gets exposed to this dust.
Which has been used in religious ceremonies the world over for 2,000 years, as the movie explained.
2 million.
No, it wasn't 2 million.
It was 2 million.
No way it was 2 million.
Dude, it was totally 2 million. They said 2 million.
Are you sure they didn't say 2,000?
Civilized societies for 2 million years have been using this dust.
2 million years. A world over. Weirdly enough, without any form of communication.
It's called red ochre.
But anyway, he goes back to the United States, and literally, the whole opening is just a plot device. Some reason that
so he can start having the memories.
Experience someone else's memories.
Right.
We don't return to Brazil. Like, he doesn't encounter, like, some sort of Brazilian cult operating in America. No.
A bunch of, like, memory monsters or some shit. You know what? Here's the thing about this movie that pisses me off so much. Like, oh, God, I can't handle these, like, twist movies. Like, some kid found out that he was adopted by a serial killer and his real dad was the cop who was hunting the serial killer. Like, it seems like if anyone comes up with a bullshit idea, I need to make a movie around this retarded thing. Like, wouldn't that be weird if that happened? So they make him go to Brazil, where he accidentally touches powder that makes you experience your parents' memories. Later turns out that's a fucking lucky break, because one of his parents is a murderer. Fucking pretty nice.
And this all becomes clear in the last 5 minutes of the movie when he stumbles upon a dungeon of evidence.
Sure, let's call it a dungeon.
It's a dungeon of evidence.
I like to call it an evidence dungeon.
Well, in any case, it's certainly not a basement. It's a dungeon. It's far too...
Strangely, in the course of defeating the old woman that Billy Zane is luckily able to overpower, he manages to destroy all the evidence. So, case closed.
Sure, yep.
Billy Zane is exonerated.
The nightmare is over.
I like to call that the Tango and Cash ending.
Yep, where everything explodes, and then job well done. Way to go, Mus.
By the way, two episodes, two Tango and Cash mentions. We're only two episodes into this podcast, and we've already mentioned Tango and Cash twice. But if you recall, Tango and Cash blow up Jack Palance's evil compound and all of the evidence that would exonerate them.
Now, it's swap Tango and Cash for Billy Zane, and instead of Jack Palance, you have Anne Margaret, the woman who I think at the point is passed out when it explodes.
It's true. We don't know if she was passed out or if maybe there had been some like horrible poison. She had stabbed with a syringe.
Yeah,
maybe it was a knockout thing. I don't know. Maybe she was unconscious.
Either poison or she's burned to death.
He beat up an elderly woman who turns out, spoiler alert, turns out that Anne Margaret's his fucking real mom through a retarded series of things that aren't worth discussing, and she's a murderer, and she bases her murdering on an angel? Part of the lesser known, like, I don't know if that's part of the Tetragrammaton or not. I don't know where you'd find that.
Wait, did you just say Tetragrammaton?
Yes. Yes, the four major books of the Jewish religion. I don't know if it comes from folklore or what.
Now, Simon, you said something about a really cool angel. What was she based on?
What, you mean Kefziel?
Yeah!
Kefziel the angel.
Now,
the angel of dead children.
Now, if I recall, she used that name, Kefziel.
Yes, she did.
When she went on the internet to find girls.
Yeah, she used that as an I am handle.
Yep, we would call her handle.
Sure. In this internet age.
Animus is good too.
Like though. The whole MySpace stalking age that we live in.
She would stalk young girls via Instant Messenger. She used the name Kefziel, but she printed it backwards. Which I find weird because presumably all the little girls she's trying to kidnap are not familiar with Hebraic folklore. I don't know. Maybe the parents are.
Otherwise, they'd read the name and be like,
Wait a minute. My daughter's being IM by someone named Kefziel. That's the angel of dead children.
Well, but I mean, either way, what this movie has taught me is that, like, she's able to IM little girls without knowing.
With impunity, sure.
She doesn't.
Well, I think what Dan's going for is more like, what, did she just start typing in random little girl sounding names? Like, daddy's little girl or baby princess. Just like, shit, I'm not coming up with anything.
Spoiled Rotten 24.
Yep.
Or even just trying like names like, Janie Anderson.
Sure.
12. Janie Anderson 12. Why not?
And like, so Janie, is that 12 just Janie? Like a random number or are you 12 years old? Like, perfect. I'll soon be kidnapping you. It's me, your new friend. Left Kudzep or whatever the fuck it is backwards.
And Janie Anderson, 12 years old, of course, is like, oh, Left Kudzep.
My new favorite internet friend.
I will meet you in the mysterious forest.
Where you will surely not kidnap me.
Thanks for sending me that really cool Flight of the Conchords video clip for me to watch.
It's weird. I do like having tea parties with life-size little girl dolls.
Yeah, that was a really creepy part of the movie where apparently Kefziel, in addition to murdering little girls, what she does is she kidnaps them and then makes like a plaster mold of their face and then makes a wax mask of it. Puts the wax mask on a doll, and she then seats that doll at a really big, long table for a tea party. Then, presumably later on, she kills the little girl. And then when new little girls get kidnapped, they all enjoy a super creepy tea party. With all the beautiful little girls. All my little babies.
You know, dolls...
That's my Anne Margaret impression, by the way.
Dolls are naturally scary.
That's true.
Somebody figured this out in Hollywood, and now...
That man's name was Billy Zane.
Now,
Speaking of which, by the way, if I could go back in time, and I had, say, a high school improv troupe...
Yep. A troupe?
I would name them the Billy Zanies. I just want to throw that out there.
They're not the Zaniacs? The Billy Zaniacs.
The Billy Zane.
The Billy and Zaniacs.
Funster Chuckleheads.
Funster?
Yep, the Billy Zane of Funster Chuckleheads. Well, if you'll remember, there was that part where Billy Zane was having one of the memories, and he said that the abductor doesn't seem as fixated on killing the children as wanting to protect them. However, the little girls did die, that's worth mentioning, so Kefziel, not that great of a protector.
Well, girls get scared when forced to endure
a creepy tea party,
And to tell you the truth, dude, I think if you're gonna, like, choose Kefziel as your, like, tagline...
Your animus.
As your animus, I think you're kind of setting yourself up for failure if your goal is not to lead to dead children.
Yeah.
As that's the angel of dead children.
Yes, specifically. Now, you might want to go with, I don't know, more gentleman of the road angel. Angel of living children, let's say.
Sure. Now, so the evidence dungeon at the end. Yes. I thought it was really cool that there was like that really wiggly hall.
That was the fucking weirdest part. Now, so I mean, obviously she has her room where she does all her like abductee research, like her notes, like things to do today, abduct more girls, underlined.
With, like, highlighter, like, what the fuck?
Right.
Like, I don't do that. And I'm smart.
Right.
I'm not a murderer.
The idea being that, like, it's the kind of to-do list that someone would write who doesn't normally write to-do lists. It's like, You know what? I'm going to write a to-do list. First, 7 o'clock, wake up. 8 o'clock, go to work. And like, you know what? You don't got to write that shit out because you're going to do it.
Right.
So, as an abductor, you don't have to write out, like, Today, must remember to abduct more girls! Exclamation point.
Plan abduction. 10 o'clock, execute abduction. 11 o'clock, enjoy abduction.
Enjoy fruits of abduction. So there was that room. However, the adjoining room was a really twisty hall, almost like a funhouse hallway, with a bunch of weird, like, crazy person words and phrases written everywhere.
Yeah, it was like the hall that you would walk down if you went to, like, some church's, like, haunted house.
Sure, or really, like, I don't know, like a fun house somewhere.
Like a J.C.'s haunted house.
I don't know where she got it.
And it says things like, abortion's bad or something abortion rules or something. What's scarier? Like, I don't know.
I guess if it was a church and they were trying to be scary, they would probably say abortion rules.
Yeah, you're
because that
right.
would be that would make it scary.
No,
because otherwise,
right.
it wouldn't
you're
be a house
right.
of horrors. It would be a house of truth.
Sure.
In any case, I remember seeing the hallway and wondering whether or not she was a carpenter. How she explained that construction to the drywall installers. Like, I'm gonna need, like, I don't know, like a really twisty hall, like that a crazy person might have. You know, if I was crazy. But then, though, let's not forget that at the end of that crazy hallway was the room of ultimate clues, like the
so
ultimate
after,
shits.
Wait, after traveling through that twisted...
The
twisted mind, he gets to, like, the reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The answers.
Sure.
Which featured a really big picture of her.
A gigantic, like, blown-up photograph of... A contemporary photograph of Anne Margaret in the middle of the wall.
In the middle, like a giant spider in the middle of a web.
Sure.
Yeah.
It did, seems kind of weird.
To be fair, it did not have murderous written on it in big red sharp.
Like, why am I such a murderer? Question mark. But then it was surrounded with, like, for instance, apparently when you get discharged from a mental hospital, they give you your own report. Like, here's why you're crazy. Which she had the wall. Along with a bunch of photos and other damning evidence.
Yeah, it was a really weird poster board. Now, I'd like to point out that the co-writer, director of the film, based his screenplay, and I'm assuming part of his directorial cues, on the novel of the same name, Memory.
Sure.
Which they mention in the opening credits.
Yep.
And
do they mention them in the closing credits?
In the closing credits, the first credit is... Please go buy my book, please. Now, having watched the movie, I will go buy this book because it's obviously very good.
Yeah, yes. I would say that it seems like it's probably a tremendous novel.
I only want to buy it once it's adapted into a graphic novel.
Sure, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Too many words are really annoying.
I want that. I want there to be a novelization of the film based on the novel, preferably written by Alan Dean Foster.
Okay.
And then I want that
David Foster Wallace?
Yes. David Foster Wallace. I would like...
We'll be writing the novelization of the movie Memory based on the novel Memory.
Right, and then I would
based
like...
Based on an original graphic novel.
Then I would like a graphic novel based on one of David Foster Wallace's footnotes.
Based on David Foster Wallace.
Sure.
About him reading the book Memory.
It'd be like a supposedly fun memory I'll never wrench again.
Sure, a great memory.
So, I'd like to introduce a new segment that we're going to have in this
podcast. Whoa, buddy.
Yeah, chill out, guys.
I got this one.
Be careful. You know, don't worry about it. I got this one. It's called Memories of Memory. What is literally your favorite moment in the movie Memory, Daniel?
I mean, I may be stealing it from you. I don't know what you're thinking of, but I know that you made us watch it a couple times. There was a moment at which mustache friend scientist said, hey... Remember that dust? We happened to feed it to these mice. And you know what happened? And Billy Zane reacted in a way. He's like, yeah, I remember. Like,
what he says is this. He says, do you remember those rats that I fed the powder to? Billy Zane's reaction with a slightly arched eyebrows to say, yeah. He says it really weird and like, yeah, I remember. That was some good shit.
Yeah,
no, it's really fucking weird.
His response is as if he was saying, remember when we got those two tie hookers?
So that's a pretty good memory.
My favorite memory is, okay, there's this awesome part where Billy Zane's walking down the street. And he sees a painting that's very reminiscent of the image he's been having from these memories. He then goes to where the artist has her studio. Walks up to her and says, I'm interested in buying one of your paintings. Her reaction is to say, rather snidely, would you buy a lot of art? Which was kind of weird. He handles it as best as he's able. And then she asks him out on a date to drink some hot chocolate. During said date, they had no point in talking about the painting that they'd like to purchase. They pretty much just talk about their lives, get to know one another. And then she promptly leaves as she has another class to teach. And you know what? He doesn't end up buying the painting. Whole thing, I think that part's really fucking weird.
Now, my memory. You know, if this movie taught me anything, it's that memories are fickle beasts. They're creatures that you can't trap into a little box. But I think the thing that I'm going to carry with me forever, probably, till I die, is the end of the film when Billy Zane realizes that the girl that he's in love with, his love interest, that Simon just mentioned, Stephanie Jacobs, mm-hmm. That was her name, was actually the girl that was kidnapped that he was seeing in the memories of his dad or mom. I don't actually remember.
No, it was his mom. It was his mom and Margaret. The ultimate murderer angel comes out.
Nonetheless, it was just really touching.
Sure it was.
I think it was an excellent Danny mom.
So. Sure. Can we take a moment just to talk about, I mean, other than Billy Zane?
Sometimes a memory is a nightmare.
For a film that does not, that, you know, not a big movie.
No.
But a great movie.
There's some name actors in this movie.
Sure there are. Billy Zane, for instance.
Other than Billy Zane, Dennis Hopper is in this movie.
Yes, Dennis Hopper
is. As we've mentioned.
Never made a bad movie.
Literally. And Margaret. In this movie,
mm-hmm.
Less well known, but his love interest, Trisha Helfer from the new Battlestar Galactica. Kind of an interesting cast. Oh.
Sorry, I gotta reply to my text message.
Stuart is getting a text message in the middle of this podcast.
Maybe it's a text message from his memories! From Kef Seal! Hey, Stu! Time to get murdered, dude!
But
yeah, Dennis Hopper, isn't it? That's true. Also, that chick from Battlestar Galactica, the Dan said.
Are you suggesting that sometimes, I would say Oscar caliber actors are put in a position where they can make either like
an exquisite film,
well, like a big money movie, mm-hmm. or just kind of like small, like, you know, like character piece.
Well, let's call it like just like a really cerebral movie. You know, like it's a thinking man's movie because it's about like memories and shit.
That's true. Dude, I totally can note the sarcasm in your voice, and I think you're doing this movie an injustice.
It's a retarded movie. It made me sad. The whole time I watched it, I kept wishing that I had died and wasn't watching it anymore.
Yeah, their agents were like, there's this movie about a memorologist.
Sure, a master memoryist. Here's making that character an Alzheimer's researcher in a movie about memories is like in Ghost Rider, how the main character's last name was Blaze. What a great-ass coincidence that his last name informs the fact that he will later be on fire. It's not good script writing.
It's his name in the comic.
Yeah, and that's stupid too, then.
We discussed this in the last podcast, but I had to cut it out for time purposes. The reason why we selected this film, which was we saw the trailer for it in front of the Korean horror movie The Host, and there was a huge response in the theater when we saw this trailer. Huge response of laughter. More laughter than I've ever seen a supposedly serious trailer.
It was the weirdest phenomenon I've ever seen. It was a trailer that clearly took itself very seriously and was very earnest about, like, memory and the nightmare of memories, and sometimes memories about murderers are scary. And right when it finished, the entire theater cracked up.
Well, and it was also a trailer that clearly was edited on an iMac. Like, someone had iMovie.
Well, it's a great tool.
There was no money left over to make a trailer after getting big stars like Billy Zane.
Sure. deep and pockets.
That shit don't come free.
Oh shit. Well, the Flophouse. Check it out.
That sucked. That was the worst bumper ever.
So I think that we're probably ready to make a judgment on this movie. Now, let me remind you of the official Flophouse categories.
Which I would like to know that.
There's number one.
Oh, that's right. I remember this.
Number one, a movie that you would not recommend to anyone.
That's right, because I'm a goddamn curmudgeon. I remember that.
Number two. There's the movie that you would recommend to someone because it's bad in a way that you find funny, like a fun, bad movie. And number three, a movie that you secretly kind of like.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So, Simon, what category would you put this in? Well,
as Stu so astutely pointed out, a lot of what I said tonight was dripping with sarcasm.
Really?
Yeah, no fake. Remember? You said that a minute ago, remember?
Okay.
I thought this movie was retarded. Now, that said, I hate this movie. And like I said, I wished I was dead. I might recommend it to other people to watch because it's so bad, with the caveat, though, that you have to watch it with a large group of people, because it's the kind of movie where if you watch it, like, with one other person and you're both just actually sitting down to watch it, have a good watch,
sure,
you're gonna wanna, I don't know, chop your own legs off.
All right, Stuart, what do you say?
The thing is, I totally recommend it. It was awesome.
You're a goddamn liar. Goddamn liar.
Dude.
You watched a third of it.
Here's the thing. I got exactly what I wanted out of this movie. Stealth, not so much. Stealth kind of sucked my dong. Not in a good way. Like, it kind of nibbled on it.
Yeah, I would say that I would recommend it to people.
You're both insane.
No, recommend it on the grounds of it being bad. But it is bad in a really fascinating way. Like I said, Billy Zane has some really offbeat line readings that just don't
make fucking weird
any sense at all. It has the craziest plot device in the world. Like they start out in Brazil, and they're like, you know what, we're going to give you the power to have your parents' memories.
Accidentally touch a powder that makes you have the memories that your parents had before you were born.
Yeah, and as you say, it's very convenient that one of his parents happens to be murderer. It's not like
really fucking works out nicely. That like, way it's not a bunch of trite or mundane memories.
Yeah, it's
like that was my first, I don't know, ice cream social I ever went to.
Oh, creepy. Yep. I'm reliving the memory of my parents fucking for the first time.
This is my parents That's going unpleasant. To a fucking really good sock hop.
Yep, a fucking box social.
Dick.
It would almost be like they also had given him the last name, like, Dr. Jeremiah Memory is having a bunch of weird-ass memories. Like, it's so stupid.
In a world full of memories.
Jeremiah Memory has to unravel two new memories.
You know, it's just that kind of my...
Dr. Jeremiah Memory,
like,
by the
my,
way. It's copyrighted.
The thing is my...
It's a movie I'm working on.
Religious beliefs. In this world, there are no coincidences, dude. So
sure,
I prefer that sarcasm.
No,
you know, you
too
put
bad.
Everything happens for a reason.
Nope, go to hell.
Everything happens for a reason.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Well, let's put memory behind us.
Sure, let's forget
it. Let's forget memory.
Let's forget that memory if we can. Memory, I said. I said memory. Dan's losing his shit. Someone else is going to have to plow this ship. Hold on, what do we got? Steve,
what do you want?
What do you got?
Walking all over.
No, go. What do you got?
I think Dan wants to talk about other movies that we might have seen other than Memory recently.
Sure, that we would recommend.
We might want to recommend.
Sincerely.
Simon, you go first.
Sure. Kind of an obvious one. I think I'm going to steal a lot of people's thunder on this one. But I saw Superbad the other day, and it was hilarious. It was an incredibly hilarious, great, hilarious movie.
I just totally watched a couple episodes from the second season of Rome, and they were really good.
Does that count as a movie? Dan, your thoughts. Does that count as a movie?
I don't, you know, it's undefined what we're recommending here.
Okay,
then let me pull this back. Instead of watching a TV show, I totally saw another trailer for a movie called Good Luck Chuck. And every time I think about that movie, I want to beat myself to death with a hammer. So if you want me to beat myself to death with a hammer, you should make me watch trailers for Good Luck Chuck.
I asked Stuart on take Stuart out on a nice date to go see Good Luck Chuck.
Now, on a just the trailer. I don't want to see the movie.
Now again, you know, two episodes in, I think we're already seeing some trends here.
Sure.
One of them being that Stuart doesn't necessarily understand the purpose of this segment.
Like, this segment is recommend a movie you recently saw. Stuart's recommendation is two episodes of a DVD TV show and a really annoying trailer you watched.
A trailer that he does not recommend.
A trailer for a movie that he really doesn't want to see. A trailer, by the way. You're like, hey, Stu, what's a great movie you saw recently? Like, I read a really cool magazine article the other day you might want to check out. Movie! What movie did you see recently that's really good?
Okay, chill the fuck out! Chill out! Okay, cool, everybody's cool. Okay, I watched Disturbia the other day.
That's true, we did watch Disturbia.
Well, we didn't really pay attention when we first watched it. I watched it again.
Okay.
Pretty good. Shia LaBeouf, not bad. Like the guy. Kind of weird love interest element. And kind of the thing that kind of pushes him to battling the murderer is kind of weird, but pretty good.
Nicely done, Stu. Luckily, this podcast, much like baseball, you only get three strikes, but you knocked it out of the park with that last one.
Thanks, buddy. I try.
Daniel, what do you got for us?
I watched a movie recently called The Silent Partner.
Sounds boring.
From the... But it wasn't. It was from the late 70s.
Sounds more boring.
It's a thriller. Basically, the premise is...
Holy shit! Three strikes! Pull out, Dan!
Wait, whoa. The fact that it's a thriller?
Yes.
It's like the third...
Yep, yeah, it's a strike. What else you got? All right.
The premise of The Silent Partner is there's a bank teller who realizes that a guy is going to rob the bank. And he sort of has an idea of when this bank robbery is going to occur. So on that day, he puts some of the money in his lunchbox.
Okay.
And knowing that once the bank has been robbed, the police are going to think, okay, that money was just part of what was stolen. However, the bank robber hears him talking about the robbery on the news and realizes that the money that's been reported stolen is larger than the money that he has, so he's then going after the guy for the extra money.
Remainder.
It's got Christopher Plummer in it as the bad guy.
Interesting.
The screenplay was written by Curtis Hanson, who went on to direct L.A. Confidential and Wonder Boys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it stars Elliot Gould. And you know what? I love that there was a time in our history when Elliot Gould was a big fucking movie star.
I agree with that. I think that's fair.
You know? Like, it's pretty awesome that there was a period where they're like, you know what? This kind of goofy guy is going to be our star.
You know, he's a major star.
He's a major
motion picture star. He was a really good dad
star.
On Friends.
That's true. He was also really good in the Oceans movie.
But now it's time to say a fond farewell.
Yes, it is.
So,
it's the saddest part of the show.
I'd like to thank you for checking into the Flophouse. That's a catchphrase I'm trying out.
Which is what? Repeat it one more time. Let's get a soundbite.
I'd like to
thank
you for checking into the Flophouse.
Well, wouldn't we say, okay, sure. Checking out.
Or checking out. But now
renting a room.
Well, yes, that's... You know, that's better, because we wouldn't want to thank them for checking out. We would want
like
to
say thank you
all the time.
I would like to thank you listeners for renting a room with the Flophouse.
Nice, there it is. Look at that. That's called brainstorming.
But it's time to check out for this installment.
Okay. Taking the middle orbit far, sure. But next time, you can drop off a deposit for a room.
Next time, we will be examining the film A Sound of Thunder.
Oh, that's right. We will. Shit.
And Simon's looking forward to it.
Sure,
and
I am.
For this episode, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Simon Fisher.
And I'm Stuart Wellington.
Good night.
Boom.
Salut.
I was dead. The thing, though, is, son of a bitch.
Jesus Christ, turn it off.
The,
What? No.
I'm sincerely interested at this point.
Let's take a moment. Who is texting you that you can't turn the fucking phone off? Who is it? What big-breasted woman is texting you?
It's certainly very...
Medium-sized.
It's certainly very mysterious.
Medium-sized breast.